All right, folks, here we are. Welcome to Crew Call with Mike Rose, Volume 1, Number 1. I guess that's how we're going to do it. And I'm here with my compatriot, Craig Biesgeier, long friend of the old show and still a friend of the new, apparently.
I certainly hope so.
How are you, Craig?
I'm doing great, thanks. I'm finally home after being out on the road about the last 4 or 5 weeks. So that's always a really nice feeling to get to sleep in your own bed.
Well, I appreciate your joining me here for this inaugural episode here. It continues our tradition with podcasts, and I know you've stepped in a few times in the past for our old buddy Scott. And if Scott Mason is listening, well, hope you enjoy the new show, Scott.
Indeed, we do.
I have a feeling he'll listen to at least one of them.
Yeah, good chance of it.
So. Just to review for anybody who has been out of the loop, we've been off for a couple of months, retooling, as the saying goes. And basically, that's just me trying to think through what we want to do with the podcast here. And I kind of came up with the concept of crew call, which is what railroads do when they need a crew for a train. And it's what we do when we need a crew for one of our op sessions. And I just thought, you know, rather than have just a dedicated cohort, I could have a situation where I know enough interesting people that if I have sort of a bench that I can call on and just get, you know, the interesting person of the month, I think we can always have somebody on the show that's interesting to talk with.
Yeah, and if nothing else, then you always have me, so yeah.
Well, exactly. So Craig will be what we call a semi-regular because mm-hmm. he has agreed to be on roughly quarterly. So we'll do this show with Craig, and I'll see who I can line up for the next month or two, and then you'll hear from him again.
Mm-hmm. So I apologize in advance for that.
Yeah. Well, so for anybody, I think if you're listening to this, maybe you know who I am. Maybe you know who Craig is, and maybe you don't. So, Craig, maybe you can tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, well, let's see. I'm in my mid-50s. I've been a model railroader for, I don't know, probably 30 years now, I think. Really long time. I model an HO scale. I model the Housatonic Railroad in 1892. So, yeah, lots of little steam engines and small boxcars and stuff.
Which begs the question,
yep.
How did you end up with that era?
Oh, no, that's a long story.
I know. You were just trying to make it as difficult as possible. Okay, I interrupted. Keep
going. You know, and I really did, actually. That's okay. So let's see. So I have a model railroad in my basement in my home. It's been in construction for probably about 15 years now. Probably about all the tracks in, it's probably about 20% scenic, and I'm starting to work on getting some more of that done. Wow. We've been working on getting the railroad back up and operating. It lay fallow for a few years, but it's back up again now, or at least it will be very shortly.
It's kind of a typical model railroad story, isn't it?
I think it kind of is, yeah.
Sometimes life gets in the way.
That's exactly it. You know, you get burned out for a while, you know, then you come back to it, you know, and that's kind of what happened to me. I mean, for me, my big draw to the hobby has always been model building. So some people, I mean, I'm also really into operations, but what really gets me up in the morning about the hobby is sitting down with plastic or wood, you know, and others, and just sitting there and starting to build a model. That just really makes me happy. It's been something I've done since I was a kid, probably like most of us, but that's really what gets me going.
So. Do you enjoy working on a structure or a locomotive or a freight car more than you do working on the layout itself?
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah.
Oh, interesting. So the layout's just a means to an end.
Well, it's exactly that. I've always said that it was kind of the thing where you needed someplace to put all this stuff. So you build buildings, you build cars, you build locomotives. It's like, well, okay. I mean, I guess a display case is nice, but it always seemed that the railroad was a better idea.
Yep. So, now do you, so, the status of your railroad is such that do you have op sessions on it?
We used to. I stopped having op sessions on it, I think, about 5 years ago. We were part of a large convention type of thing that people came for, and I had spent a lot of time, about 6 months, working on the railroad to get it to the point where it was ready for all these people to come in and operate and everything, and there's some great stories involved with that, like when I blew up my railroad twice. Sometime we could get into that maybe.
Leo kaboom
in a big way. That's right. And in a very expensive way. So
that's like throwing those dollar bills into the dumpster, I always say.
Totally. Oh, that's exactly what it was. And got me the nickname Sparky too, which is kind of unfortunate. But
okay.
But right after that, things got a little, I just kind of got burned out, and I really didn't go back and touch the railroad for about 2 years. And starting about 2016 or so, I started getting back into doing some models on them. I've really been kind of building back up now. And we just had, I said on one of the other podcasts a few months ago that this past Christmas, we had some workmen in while I was away out of the state on a job. And they came in and they broke part of the railroad by accident.
You know, I think you were telling me about that at NERPM, right?
Yep, I think that's exactly right.
I do remember that story. That's one of those heartbreaking stories. And when was the funeral held for those workmen?
That's a good question. I'm afraid I'll have to answer that question on the grounds that I might incriminate myself.
Well, you are from New Jersey, so I get that.
It's true.
They're in the Meadowlands someplace, you know? Right?
Exactly. So, yeah, they will never be seen again, that's for sure.
It's too bad that you have the blood-brain barrier of New York between us, because I'd like to see your layout sometime.
Oh, I would love for you to come down and see it.
And it could happen, you know. I always say that, but it's one thing to get into New York City from, coming from my way. It's another to get all the way through it.
That's true. You're not wrong about that, actually.
And then once you're through it, you have to get back, and that's just a whole other ordeal. Mm-hmm. But actually, one of those times where it could work, I think you go to the Valley Forge meet, right?
I do, yes.
Perhaps coming back from that might be a time to do it, because I've got to get through the barrier anyway, so it might be a good time to do it if you're not burned
out.
There
you go. Oh, yeah, no, at any time like that, all good.
We'll have to see what we can schedule on that. Mm-hmm. My feelings on the modeling. I mean, I went through long periods of time building my layout and then not building my layout and then just going downstairs and looking at it and being disappointed in ways that I couldn't really put my finger on. Mm-hmm. And used that time to make really a slew of locomotives and freight cars and really just kind of focused on that for years. Mm-hmm. All of my early magazine articles are nothing but that,
I remember, yeah.
And it was really only, I think for me, it was connecting with the right people who are now all parts of my ops crew now, guys like Mike Confalone and Neil Schofield and Jim Reddington and, Ken Karlowitz, all these people with great railroads.
Yeah, they're an amazing bunch.
And you get to now, of course, Ken came late to the party. I think we all influenced him, but he has come along in at astonishing speed and has a beautiful railroad. But I think when you know what you want to do and you plan it right from the beginning and you don't have to do multiple layout kabooms, you can get there a lot faster than, say, I did.
Well, I hear what you're saying. If you don't have to get sidetracked all the time and constantly go back and going over ground that you've been to before, yeah, you can make a lot of accomplishments very quick.
Well, I chalk it off to a magnificent learning experience, and it's really the only positive way to look at that. But I feel like at one point I found my prototype, I realized what I had to do, I realized what I didn't like about my layout, and then went ahead and changed that, and as many of our listeners know, I put on an addition to the house last year, which allowed me to greatly expand the railroad. Mm-hmm. And we'll be jumping around here a little bit, but I guess I can say that almost to the day of 9 months later, yes, in the time you could have built another human being, the layout is operational and running again. And it was actually quite a day. It was good to get things rolling again, and I immediately scheduled a shakedown op session for mid-October. Mm-hmm. And that's a good time to get, I'm just having like three or four people over and we're just going to see if we can break it. And I don't know, I'm pretty optimistic about it, because the undisturbed portion of the layout basically ran just like it always did. in That's testing. Good. And the new section of the layout is all brand new and built to bulletproof modern standards. And I'm kind of amazed at how much got done in that 9 months, because not only mm-hmm. did I just like put up the bench work and lay the track, but there are two or three key scenes mm-hmm. that have depth to them and had to be sort of built out from the center towards the aisle. And I realized there was never going to be a better time to do it than right now. So, for example, the scene at DuPont, which is the crossing of Route 11 on a highway over D&H, over Conrail, over a stream, that has been talked about at length in the past. But that scene is very, very far along. And I would say it's probably... Wonderful. I don't know, it might even be 80 or 85% done at this point. In fact, right before this recording, I was down there. I saw I had about an hour and a quarter, and I said, I can make some trees. So I knocked off 70 more trees.
70? Good
right,
Lord.
Right before this show, and added to the 62 that I already plugged in. I think it's going to basically flesh out that scene. So
nice.
What I will be doing is posting some photos of some of this on the podcast Facebook group, just so people can kind of follow along with what's going on.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
This has been kind of a long introduction here, but I should say that my feeling on the show moving forward is I'm going to basically, for my purposes, I'm just going to be talking about what I'm doing, what I'm interested in, what I'm excited about, what I'm passionate about, and hopefully that will make it the most interesting thing to talk about. My goal is to try to do the show on a pretty much monthly basis, which means I'm sure to get 11 shows a year out there.
Yep.
there's always something that comes up.
Oh, without a doubt.
I've got, you know, thinking about my obsession, and I've got the one... thing that could derail that, pardon the pun, would be the imminent arrival of grandchild number two. So
congratulations.
I'm hoping that he comes out about a week before he should.
Come on, kid. Come on.
And that's purely selfish, although I think his mom would be right there with me on that.
She's, tell her to do some jumping jacks. That's
she's really, she is very ready. So all of that's coming up over the next two or three weeks here. So
wow.
I guess the other thing that I'm enjoying about this new format is we're doing some things technologically differently here. Mm-hmm. Instead of using our least favorite medium for communication, which is Skype, a program that used to be wonderful until Microsoft bought it and then spared no effort in making it worse and worse.
Well, they certainly made it popular, and I think that was its downfall, right? I mean,
well, you know, I mean, did they have to make it yet another advertising revenue channel and then subject it to the usual ugly update process that is all things Microsoft? Well, don't get me started on that, because we're both in IT.
Oh, that's for sure.
That could be a week's worth of shows. But this is a Zoom meeting. And although I've been in a million Zoom meetings before, I had not hosted one, nor had I recorded with it. And as it turns out, Zoom seems to do this very well and effortlessly. Yes. The other thing it will permit us to do is to have another person on the call instead of just being Mike and whoever he's talking to. Mm-hmm. It can be three or four people.
Absolutely.
So we'll experiment with that moving forward. Now, a technical note here for the listeners. This show is going to go out as the last show in the Mike and Scotty Live feed. And I should probably explain what that means. To get a podcast out there to iTunes and to the Feed Blaster and all these other mediums for downloading or finding out about a podcast, you have to submit the podcast notice of the newly recorded podcast into this feed. And the feed goes out and lets everybody know that. And then anybody who's subscribed to that can download the show. What I didn't want to do was lose the existing listener base. So I'm going to move very carefully in changing the feed name, because I don't want to, you know, throw away a huge group of people and have to get everybody to find out what the new show is. Mm-hmm. In case that happens, remember, folks, the name of this show is Crew Call with Mike Rose. And it can always be found at our website. So that would be the themodelrailroadpodcast.com. And that hasn't changed since the very beginning of time. Mm-hmm. So in the event that I find a way to screw up the name change in the feed, remember, you can always listen to it at themodelrailroadpodcast.com. You can download it from there. And you can also use, you know, your normal podcast downloading methodologies to look for the new name of the show. If all goes well, you won't have to do any of that. It'll just come in under a new name. But
well, keep our fingers crossed.
Yeah, I mean, it, you know, I haven't had to do this before, and it's possible that something will go off the rails. So I just wanted to make sure that somebody had a way of getting this information. And of course, it'll be on the website, it'll be on the Facebook group, and all of that stuff. But I wanted to make sure there was also a recorded, hopefully already downloaded, saved, and treasured recording from us that you can refer back to that has this information.
Excellent point.
You think that makes sense?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. We talked about the show concept. We talked about the show schedule. Moving right along. So I think I can probably expand a little bit upon layout update here. I mean, I did talk about the fact that it's up and running again, and that DuPont is working. Mm-hmm. And the way I designed the expansion of the layout, I wanted to get things running again and yet have things to do, you know, for probably a couple or 3 years in terms of getting things presentable in different sections. So I will be working on getting presentable now the connecting pieces. Moved Pittston Yard out into the new building, joined it up with some new sections. Once I get all of those connecting tissue all presentable like the rest of the layout, then I'll move on to the expanded areas, which will include the D&H. There's an industrial park to build. There's a shoreline to build. So I think I'm going to have fun things to do for the foreseeable future and not have to worry about, oh, I got to get this done so I can do this. You know, the fact of the matter is I can get out of Manhattan project mode and get into walking down there and saying, what do I feel like doing today? You know, and that's a great luxury. I really want to get back to doing some freight car modeling and the locomotives that are sitting there. But it's, for me, it was a little hard to do that when you've got your layout not operational, but it's like 90% of the way there. You know, you've got to kind of see that through and get
it happening.
I totally
understand being in the same place.
I think anybody who has an operating model railroad can relate to that. You know, you haven't operated your own layout in a while, but you operate on a lot of other model railroads.
Now, I do.
I think it's very different being an attendee versus being the host, you know?
Oh,
I think,
it's completely different.
I think you get different things out of it, you know? I mean, you go to Dave Ramos's how often? How often does he operate?
Well, I actually don't go to Dave's very often anymore. I've been going a lot to Tony Custer and a few other people, you know, here and there. Let's see, what's his name? Perry Squire, some other New Jersey people, I like that. So, and usually those are, you know, I mean, Tony operates about 6 or 8 times a year at this point, mostly because a lot of, you know, different deadlines, things like that for projects he's working on. You know, I tell you, since he retired, he's been busier than I've ever seen him.
You know, that's such a cliche. And yet, you know, I am technically semi-retired. Now, what does that mean? It means that as I was getting my business to the point where things were starting to wind down a little bit, I was looking at some other opportunities. I did some consulting work that was akin to almost like a full-time job, but it was through my business. And I was glad to have that experience because I've always had my own business, but to go out into the corporate environment, which you're very used to.
Oh, yes.
It was an eye-opener. I was surprised on the one hand at how many similarities there were to what I was already doing. Mm-hmm. And I was also astonished at how inept and incompetent these big corporations could be at times. They couldn't get out of their own way. It was astonishing.
I understand that too, believe me.
You know, you think you have some kind of an idea of how bad it is, but until you get inside and you see them making the sausage, it's like, oh my God, how does this company even work at all? So
there was
that element of it too. And it made me feel a lot better about the procedures and methodologies that I developed just really on my own without formal training, just to get things done properly.
Sure.
So I was kind of following that path, and then there was just a renaissance in the business. Customers came out of the woodwork. Certain things happened that caused existing clients to need a lot more IT services. And mercifully, it has coincided with trying to take some of the sting out of what the addition cost me, which is about twice what I thought.
Yikes.
So I've been working a lot, particularly this summer. It was a good time to get a lot of IT cutovers done and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And despite all that, I still managed to do a lot on the railroad, you know? And I get asked all the time, like the furnace guy who comes once a year, right? But he's a train guy.
Okay.
He came over to clean the furnace a couple of weeks ago, and he walked in, and he just, of course, the last time he was here, the room was empty.
Right.
Nothing had happened yet. It was just a bare addition. And he, you know, he walked in and he said, oh my God, he said, have you had a team of people working on this? And I said, no, just me and my buddy, Dave.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
I thought about it because I get this a lot, you know, people walk in and they say, how the heck can you do all of this? And I think to myself, they don't know how many times I'm standing there just scratching my head going, I don't know.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? It's part of the process. But I think that, you know, you talked about how long you've been model railroading.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's a little over half a century, believe it or not.
Oh wow, that's a long time.
You know, when you put it in this kind of a time sense, it tells you A, how old you actually are, but B, how long you've been doing it and enjoying it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you kind of know what you're doing after you've been doing it for 50 some odd years.
One would hope. Yeah.
One would hope. Although I have to say that methodologies have changed almost entirely across that period of time.
Well,
so,
true.
You know, the materials, the approach, the ability to discriminate between what you think is important and what somebody else might think is important, and to focus in on what really matters, and to be able to just let some other stuff go that really, in the greater scheme of things, maybe doesn't matter, you know?
Right.
And that is something that I think, you know, the perspective of time has been something to learn, you know? But when you can focus on what truly matters and you know what you're doing and you've got all your materials and you're intent upon not wasting time and you can use an hour and a quarter before a meeting to make 72 trees.
There you go.
You get a lot done. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I guess that's one of the things I don't do is I don't waste much time. You can't count the time that you stand there looking at it, trying to figure out what to do as a waste of time. It's part of the creative process.
That's true.
So for me, you know, you were talking about how you really enjoy models, building, and that the layout is sort of a means to an end.
Mm-hmm.
For me, the thing I love about the hobby is I literally enjoy every aspect of it.
Very lucky person then.
I've always been that way with this hobby, but it's because I have a myriad of interest, right? So
of course
I enjoyed the hell out of all building all the bench work. It went up in like less than 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the shop is cooking along, it's efficient, and the concept was there, and Dave's newly retired, and we just cranked it out, you know, and I thoroughly enjoyed that whole process.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always loved building track and laying track.
Okay.
But I haven't been somebody who loves putting in a billion spikes. So the change in methodology of gluing the track down with DAP vinyl adhesive caulk. Complete revelation. You know, you can
It's huge.
You can fly with that stuff. And I don't know where I learned it or learned about it, but I decided early on, I think I was doing it actually before this new edition. I did it in some of the layout Kaboom redos. Mm-hmm. It's just the way to go. You can put it down and get it down and it stays down. And if you need to get it up, you can.
Yeah, you can get it up without damaging the track. I mean, we did that all on my upper level. We did the whole, on my railroad, we did the entire lower level with the hand-laid track and wood ties and things like that. And it took 5 years, you know.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
We really enjoyed it, actually. I mean, I can't say it was a tedious thing. It was a lot of fun building the turnouts and everything like that. But then we got to the second layer, and it was kind of like everybody got out, like, looking like, do you have to do this again?
you burn out on anything, I think, that is too much of one thing, right?
You really do. And so we ended up doing the entire upper level the same way you're describing with, you know, adhesive caulk to lay down flex track. And we did it all in, I think, less than a year.
Right.
And it's just as, you know, just as reliable as the stuff downstairs. And it went up so much faster. So,
well, you know, you say I enjoy building track, and I do. Did mm-hmm. I want to take, I mean, I probably installed, I don't know, 33 or 35 turnouts. Mm-hmm. Would I have wanted to build 35 turnouts? No.
Yeah, well, you know, I've kind of done that. And there was a while when I was cooking along with it pretty good, and I was turning out about 4 a week.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And
but that's all you did.
Well, but, you know, I mean, unlike you, I need sleep.
No, I sleep a lot, actually. I get tired.
I'm not sure. I get the impression that you don't really sleep at all.
Nobody can reach me in the morning, you know.
You're well known for getting up at the crack of noon. So
yes, I've always felt the best thing about morning is that it's over by noon.
There you go.
Although I have appreciated certain mornings, usually when I'm up, you know, all night.
Yeah.
But getting a little too old for that, I think.
Understandable. So the
techniques, I think, have changed enough that you know, think about the making trees. I remember the first. I think it was a starter kit, you know, the Scenic Express.
Oh, yeah.
Tree starter kit. I think it makes like 12 trees or something, you know.
And okay. Yep.
Took me all
it's
afternoon.
It's like a little bag, right, if I remember. Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. or a small box or something. But, I mean, okay. This was so long ago. This was thousands of trees ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember looking at that and thinking, oh, boy, this is going to take me forever.
Mm-hmm.
And it could have if I hadn't really looked at the process and said, all right, how can I improve upon this process? How can I do this that where they come out certainly good enough for the layout and not worry so much about making each individual tree mm-hmm. a foreground model? Because you can do that if you want by carefully selecting the armature and paying extra attention to it and even using other types of armatures. But when you're modeling massed forested hillsides like I'm doing, mm-hmm. that would be insane.
No, that'd be crazy.
So I usually in a little over an hour, if I have already painted armatures,
mm-hmm.
I can crank out 65, 70 trees without breaking a sweat.
That's pretty good.
Now, before I started needing these trees, here's a quickie anecdote about the trees themselves for anybody using super trees.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I had bought a couple of cases of them on sale.
Okay.
And I thought I had bought them last year. Only as I investigated it further, I had actually bought them 2 years ago.
Aha.
Okay. It's not even the worst of it, but I'm getting to that.
Okay.
So
I don't want to tell you how long I've had the boxes in my basement.
Well, you want to pay close attention now to what I'm saying here. So these were sealed cases.
Yes.
So it was time to make some more trees. So I went down and got the case, brought it into the basement, mm-hmm. opened it up like I normally would, and I noticed that they looked a little gray.
Oh, no.
So I reached in to pull out the first, you know, it's like in a super tree case, it's like four big,
right,
whatever like those plants are shoved right. in there. Mm-hmm. So I went to pull one of the things out, and this just cloud came out of it.
Oh, no. Thought,
oh, no, is right.
Oh, no.
So my conclusion was they must have gotten moldy down there.
Oh, boy. Okay.
So I'm looking at a whole case of super trees that I not only need to use now.
Right.
But, you know, they're not cheap.
No, no, they're not.
So I thought, all right, first thing I did was bring it outside, put on a dust mask.
Good idea, yeah. Okay.
And just start kind of like pulling it apart. Mm-hmm. And I'm still to this day not sure if I had a mold problem or mm-hmm. something else, and I'm getting to that. Okay. Now that the case is outside on a couple of sawhorses, I'm looking right at the label. These came mm-hmm. from Walther's.
Okay.
And it actually had the Walther's PO number and date from Walther's to Scenic Express on the side of the box.
Okay.
This one went back to 2015, I think.
Okay.
So it's a 4-year-old box of super trees.
Mm-hmm.
So not only had I kept it for 2 years, it was already 2 years old when I got it from them.
Wow.
So as I'm pulling this thing apart, I'm not convinced that it's mold necessarily that I'm dealing with, because as you know, mm-hmm. these super trees have like tiny, 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 tiny little blossomy sort of things on yep. them here and there. And then they've got all of those little reprehensible leafy things that you have to pluck off, which mm-hmm. is the least fun part of
that's for sure,
trees,
yeah.
you know? Mm-hmm. And I've developed a technique for that too, where, you know, I used to sit there with a strong light and an optimizer and tweezers and,
yep.
you know, I don't do that anymore.
So what do you do?
I try to do it outside. Okay. I make sure that I have a light background.
Okay. Makes it easier to see them. Okay.
And I just hold up the tree and reach in with my digits and yank them off. Now you're
really?
Thinking, doesn't that damage the tree?
I would yeah. think it would.
Sometimes.
Okay.
But here's what I did this time.
Okay.
Because I was concerned about a potential mold problem,
mm-hmm.
I grabbed a can of Lysol. And as you can imagine, these 4-plus-year-old armatures were pretty brittle.
Oh, yeah, dry as a bone, I'm sure.
Grabbed a can of Lysol and just soaked each one of them down and tossed them into a box.
Okay.
What I found was that the Lysol just brought them completely back to life. They dried but stayed flexible.
Really?
Their sort of normal color returned, and I could reach in there and pull off the leaves without breaking anything.
Wow. Okay.
So I thought, So I for this case, for the oldest case,
mm-hmm.
I basically just pulled out all of the best ones and then threw all the B stuff away.
Okay.
On the second case, the label from Walther's was much newer, so it was maybe half the age of the first one,
mm-hmm.
even though I bought them both at the same time. And on that one, I probably had double the yield.
Ooh, okay.
So I was basically able to make a big, full, old-style super tree box full of the armatures that I then painted. And my favorite flat black spray paint was no longer available, but I had plenty of the Rust-Oleum camo brown paint around.
Mm-hmm, yep.
And that was at least as good, the only downside being more money.
Yeah, there is that.
But it worked great, and a much better nozzle, you know, easier on my hand and finger and all of that stuff. Just, I wouldn't go back even if the other paint didn't.
Yeah, they have the
available.
Big wide button, right, if I remember
exactly.
correctly.
Yeah. And less resistance. You know, it's just a better spraying experience, and it went just fine. So.
And not only that, but your layout smells lemony fresh now.
Well, you know, it would have, except now that I painted it, you don't have that smell anymore.
Ah, so that's good. Okay.
Yep. And then, you know, they get dunked in the matte media and all that. So by that time, there was zero residual Lysol smell.
Okay. This is good. I'm taking notes here because I have a box downstairs that's got to be 10 years old.
My advice, open it outside with a dust mask.
That's a wonderful idea. Like I said, I'm taking notes. I'm going to go get some Lysol.
Also, Home Depot has these super mega cans of Lysol.
Do they? Okay.
Get two.
Okay,
you then will go through more than one.
Oh, my. All right, then. Well, now I have a plan. That's good.
Yeah. The other thing that I just tried, and I don't know if you've heard of this, but I saw somewhere, probably on Facebook, which means it could have been any one of, you know, dozens of groups that I'm a member of there, right? It all just comes in as this fire hose feed, which I'm sure you're very familiar with.
Oh, yes.
And somewhere I saw that certain kinds of hydrangeas, you could use their blossoms as a tree armature.
Interesting. Okay.
So I was out there emptying one of the endless buckets of yard waste that my wife generates from the garden. And I'm looking at the oak leaf hydrangea there, and I thought, kind of an interesting looking blossom. So it was one of those better to ask forgiveness than permission moments. So I cut off one of the blossoms. And these things, I don't know if you're familiar with them, but you know, they start out like a I think these might have been white, I forget the exact color, but as you get into the fall, they turn sort of this reddish, rusty kind of color. And one of the beautiful things about the plant is it looks good all summer and all fall, which is
that's nice.
Very few shrubs can say that, you know.
True.
So I took the blossom, brought it inside, picked off all of the petals, and all of a sudden I could see what they were talking about. Now, it didn't look like a super tree armature, but it had a distinctive center trunk and all the little arms coming off and sort of like these little, how would I describe it? Like almost like little bud-like things. And I thought, let's see what this thing does.
Okay.
So I took it outside and painted it with the same camo brown paint.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked interesting. So rather than just kind of like dunk it and foam it like I would with a super tree, I hit it with the unscented hairspray and used some of the Scenic Express and Knock Bare Leaves material.
Okay.
You just sort of sprinkle onto it. And I did that a couple of times and it was almost there. And then I sprinkled a little bit of the fine Scenic Express ground foam on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't look bad. And you know what? I'll probably end up posting a picture of both kinds of trees on the podcast group so you can see the difference. Now,
yeah, I look forward to that.
I ended up just putting it in as another one of the trees that I installed. And what I liked about it was it just looked like another type of tree.
Yeah, that's just what I was going to say. Yeah.
Now there are some people who really know their trees, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I'm not one of them. I can tell you what a maple tree is or an oak tree. When it gets to the pine trees, I can tell you what a spruce is, blue spruce, you know, compared to a non-spruce pine tree. And there's a zillion different pine trees.
Sure.
I don't know all of those. You know, I wouldn't know a northern white pine from a scrub pine, probably. Well, maybe I would if I had them side by side. But what I'm getting at is the more I looked at this hydrangea blossom, the more I thought, it reminds me of some pine tree that I saw. So I went online and I started Googling images of northeastern pine trees.
Okay.
And I found the tree. I found it. And it's a tree that's common in Pennsylvania. And the next thing that I'm going to try is I'm going to try to make a pine tree with this armature.
You're going to use those fine needle type?
I think so. Line? Yeah. I think what I'm going to do is brush on some glue.
Okay.
Like I would be doing static grass, and I'm going to load the static grass gun with shorter dark green material and, you know, put the ground clamp on the bottom of the trunk and give it a shot.
Hey, excellent.
Because I could really use a way to make pine trees.
Pine trees are hard to come by. It's true.
And who doesn't need a crap load of pine trees, right?
I need a bunch.
You know, it's like the next frontier. So I think that'll be an interesting thing to evaluate moving forward. I'll probably be trying it as early as this weekend.
Oh, well, I look forward to that too then. Like, I got to tell you a quick funny story about trees. About 3-4 years ago, Mike Baker from Nicanura Models we were talking about a bunch of this stuff, and he came by and actually gave me a whole bunch of sedum, which apparently grows in their yard. So I got
I've got a lot of that too. Is that useful?
Somewhat. I don't particularly care for the structure very much, but if you put a lot of flocking on, well, not flocking, but the polyfoam and some, or even graft in some super tree branches, you can make them look a lot better. And it does that same thing like you were saying. It makes it look like a slightly different tree, which is, I think, a little variety is a really good thing.
So particularly is the mid-ground. Is the trunk good?
I'd say it's a little better than a super tree trunk, which is very thin.
Yes.
But it's a little thicker. With paint, probably look a lot better that way. So in that sense, yes, I would think so. But while we were having this conversation, he said, have you ever seen a smoke tree? And I'm like, no, I have no idea what that is. So he's like, oh, it's a nice tree. And then they come around in the early summer, and they have these blossoms that come out, and they're perfect tree armatures. I'm like, really? He's like, okay, yeah. So I told my wife about it. She says, oh, I know what a smoke tree is. Yeah, I'll pick one up. So
I think we have one.
Well, you should go check it out. Now, here's
I'm making a note here.
You should. And so here's the funny part is my
wife. That's a spring thing, right? You want the blossom?
A spring, early summer, yeah. And it blossoms, and then all that stuff falls off, and then it becomes this really nice armature. It's a little soft, but it will, when you dry it, it'll get a little stiffer.
Sure.
But the funny thing for me is that we've had the tree now, like I said, for 3 or 4 years, and every summer in the beginning of the summer, it does this thing, and I come out and I go, oh, they're great, I gotta harvest them. And then I get totally distracted. And by the time I think about it again, they're all gone. So well, now the tree's
20. You go off and do some warehouse or something.
Absolutely. That's it. And then now the tree's 20 feet tall. And there's got to be, I don't know, when it pops up, there's these armatures are everywhere. But every year, for some reason, I'm not around when it happens. So I have not harvested a single thing yet. But they look really good.
So you don't even really have a picture of one.
I do not.
You have a ladder?
Several, actually. Yeah. And that's what it's going to come to. If I can get there out there this summer when late the spring, coming up when they do it, I'm hoping to have a couple of boxes full of stuff.
So this isn't a shrub. This is a tree.
It's a tree. Yeah. I mean, it came as like a little, shrubby looking thing, but like I said, it's 20 feet tall now.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I will be talking to my horticultural wife about this after the show.
By all means.
So if anybody mentioned a smoke bush, which
smoke bush, smoke tree, yeah, I think they're the same thing.
But I thought it had some wispy looking kind of things on it, which is how it got its moniker.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, they are kind of wispy and all like that, but it in some ways it resembles a super tree, but it's a little bit more, how do I describe this? It has more of a pine tree appearance than a super tree, I would say.
Well, there you go. So that alone could be interesting,
yeah,
right? Because
that's why I wanted to mention it.
The next frontier.
Exactly. So it's definitely something to look for.
And it's because I've made all my hillsides out of the green florist foam, it means that I can go back and add pine trees intermixed within the super trees that are there at will, almost with zero effort. You just...
Right.
Stick
I mean, basically,
in.
You don't even have to plant them. You just stick them in and the super trees will hold them in place.
I've done that actually at times with just like the leftover super tree material. I paint it.
Right.
And I grab a fistful of it and just dunk it into the mad medium and just roll it around in the foam and spread it out and let it dry.
Yeah, it undergrowth, the
yep.
underbrush.
And I just shove that in amongst the trees, and it's great for hiding the trunks and being along the edges of things. And I don't think you can have enough of that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree.
Well, have you made a tree with the sedum?
I have not. I still have this big bag of it sitting there. I've had it about a year or two now. But I am looking forward to pull it out and try to get some stuff made with it.
Well, I mean, I think we should have an assignment for you before the next show. I think you should make a tree.
Okay. I can make a few, I think.
And, sometimes it's a catalyst to actually get into that mode.
It is. And actually, that's something I need to do desperately. It's funny because what you were saying earlier about, if you wanted to make every tree like a foreground thing. Well, for me, the period that I'm modeling in the 1890s, there weren't a lot of forests left in New England. They had all been clear cut.
Right.
You know, for many, many years. I mean, you know, all the shipbuilding, all the houses, everything. I mean, there was, you know, specimen trees in most towns, but, you know, except in the most wealthy neighborhoods where they would have elm trees down the street. You know, there was big fields and there was not a tree around to be seen. So it's kind of, for me, I would love to be able to have those things to use them as view blocks and, you know, like that, but there just weren't that many in my period.
So do you have to make stone walls and things?
I do. I do.
And actually, how are you modeling your stone walls?
Not very well.
little pebbles super glued
pretty
together?
Pretty much little pebbles, yeah. Actually, what I did, the first one that I did, I had a bunch of aquarium gravel left over from an old tank, and I painted the two different colors of brown. And then I mixed them together, and I kind of just dragged them out, you know, baked with my fingers, and made a rock pile. Then I just kind of drew it out until it was basically in the shape, and then I medium the whole thing down. It actually came out all right.
So it looked like what they would call a rubble wall as opposed to more of a crafted one.
Exactly, yeah.
Yep.
Which, my experience with what I've seen up in New England is that's what a lot of them look like. Now, that's what they look like today. They may have looked better back in the day, you know, but for now, today, you go up there and it's all this, you know, brown rock that's just, you know, piled up.
Well, you know, in your area, in probably your modeling area, the rock tends to be on the browner side.
It does.
And where I am, it's all these shades of grays, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I do a lot of bike riding out in South Dartmouth and Westport, and it's just miles of stone walls. You know, some are built better than others, but you know, what a farmer would do is he would plow up all the rocks that the glaciers left here.
Exactly.
And make stone walls with them. That's the only way. Right. What else are you going to do with them, really?
Well, exactly. Yeah, they weren't good for anything.
And, you know, gravity is a powerful force. So these, and rocks are heavy. I've built stone walls on my property here in my younger days. I wouldn't even think about doing that now. But, you know, the inertia that a heavy stone has on top of another heavy stone, I bet these walls haven't changed a whole heck of a lot over all these countless decades because they tend to stay where they are. And you know, you can tell when you're looking at these things that they've been there for
long
eons.
Long time, yeah.
But not, like you say, not every wall looks the same, and it probably reflects upon the people who were building it. You know, how much of a hurry were they in? How much did they actually care what the wall looked like?
Mm-hmm.
How robust did it need to be to keep the cattle in if that's what they were using it for?
Exactly. And I'm actually planning, I've only built one so far, but I'm actually planning on doing a couple of different styles in different areas for exactly that reason.
Now, you're strict prototype, or are you proto freelance, or how would you describe it?
Well, I mean, I consider myself strict prototype, but you know, in fact, everybody, even the most strict, it tends to be somewhat freelance anyway, because you literally can't do it one to one. So
yeah, we're working in a basement, you know.
Yeah, at some point you're going to have to, you know, do something freelanced a little bit, or you know, cut corners because you have to. So, but I do consider myself a prototype modeler.
So you are hampered or aided by the fact that you can't just drive out there and see it like it was, right? So you go by books and whatever pictures you can find. And
to an extent, yeah. I am lucky in that particular area of Connecticut and Massachusetts, particularly where the railroad ran, in Connecticut, it's up Route 7. Which goes from Norwalk all the way up to the Massachusetts border.
Okay.
And a lot of that area is still exactly the same as it was back in the 1890s. It really is. I mean,
there are parts of my town that are like that too. We have these little villages that go back to like the 1600s and, you know, they have plaques on the houses, you know, saying 1712. And, you know, you just think, wow.
Yeah, exactly.
I've been in some of these buildings, you know, that when you go inside, there's not a single plumb or parallel line in it. You
yeah,
know
well,
what
not
I mean?
Now. Yeah, that's for sure.
And, but the doors all work, you know, they must have just kept adjusting these doors over time, and now they're parallelograms.
Yankee ingenuity, you know?
Yes.
But the truth is that, yeah, you go up there, and, you know, these are areas that weren't necessarily, you know, right in the center of town, per se. You know, it kind of sneaks around next to the river here and there. And these, so a lot of these areas were not really the best, you know, areas where people really wanted to develop. So as a result, it's been left relatively fallow. And so a lot of it, probably about 70% of it at this point, last time I was up there was about 10, 12 years ago, that I really, you know, did a safari and actually went out along the line. And a lot of it is still there. You know, I mean, certainly the track's been upgraded, but the right of way is still there. There's still a lot of buildings. Sure, there's, you know, a warehouse here or there. There's obviously been new construction since then, but you can still see a lot of buildings that date back to or close to that period.
You know, that is interesting. Now, as you may know, I model 1984. Mm-hmm. And I have found the 80s to be a strange period in some ways, because, like, for example, if you look at vehicles, right, model vehicles that are available, mm-hmm. you have stuff from the, you know, 70s, 60s, 50s, 40s, no problem.
Sure.
You also have more modern stuff. Almost right. Nothing is available from the 80s for some reason.
Is that right?
It's like an underserviced niche, which I don't know really why that is. Hmm. I've also noticed that like early Conrail photos are abundant. So I think everybody that was, you know, lamenting the passing of their favorite railroad went out there and you know, took a lot of photos before it was all gone.
Sure.
And painted blue. And then Conrail got their act together and was really a heck of a railroad in the 90s and right up until the end. There's a lot of pictures available of mm-hmm. 90s Conrail. I took a lot of pictures myself during that time. Okay. And I'm finding the 80s pictures, particularly that sort of 83, 84 period, it's much harder for me to get good photos from that from that period. But I still feel that there's no substitute, if you're a prototype modeler, to visiting your area and sort of just getting that feel.
That's very true.
Pores, yeah. You know. So I try to at least once a year to get down there. Now, I've had a couple of situations where I've wanted to model something, and it's just gone, like completely gone. You know, the town of Tunkhannock is like that. Mm-hmm. If Wayne Sittner hadn't stumbled into that area and taken those modeler photos, many of which that I've used to model that town, mm-hmm. I would have had no idea what that town looked like in my era. Mm. They put Route 6 through that whole area where the railroad was, and it's all just vanished.
Mm.
So anytime you can revisit that area and see something of what was there, I think it's just a huge plus for
getting
that feel. And you know, getting the feel then enables you to sort of extrapolate and interpolate and fill in the blanks of information you don't have.
Yep, that's very true.
So you know, what's your...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, did you finish up what you're saying?
No, all I was going to say is that it's funny you do that. And of course, today, those areas of Connecticut are heavily forested.
Sure.
You know, so it's funny because you're going back 120 years.
You have to picture it without trees.
That's it. You know, you go there and it's like, oh, look at all the, and then you look at the pictures from the time and it's like, everything's just it's fields. You know? It's just, there's like one tree.
So I was going to ask you two questions.
Uh-huh.
What's the next event that you're going to be attending?
Okay.
You can answer that one, then I'll ask
first,
you the
that's
other
fine.
One.
Okay, well, I'm sure you're aware that actually this weekend is the MARPM, the Mid-Atlantic RPM down in Baltimore, I think.
Yes.
And there's also the Northeastern Region Convention going on in Syracuse, which unfortunately I'm not at either one of them.
Really?
No, unfortunately, I was going to, but I literally just got back, I think, was it yesterday? From a trip to California for work. So I had to call up, I was supposed to do a presentation at MARPM, and I had to call them up a couple of weeks ago and tell them, look, I mean, it's just going to be too close. I'm not going to be able to make it.
Right.
So unfortunately, I was supposed to be there, but I'm here, which is good for you. But
well, yes, it is. I'm actually, we did schedule the date of this recording around your availability.
We certainly did. And so anyway, it worked out this, it really, at least for this, it worked out well. But the next thing I'm going to be at is the Mideastern Region Convention, which is going to, for the NMRA. And I think that's going to be time in the middle of October. I don't know the exact date.
Where is that?
It's in King of Prussia, Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Yeah. It's actually very close to where the other RPM that you and I like it's going to be. So.
Right. Right. It's also, yeah. It's also near the second largest mall in America.
That's right. I'm looking forward to that. That'll be in October. I'm going to be doing a presentation there on 3D printing.
Oh, okay.
Which should be a lot of fun. I gave the presentation back in, I think it was in July, to a small group here in New Jersey for an NMRA meet, and it was very, very nicely received. So I'm really looking forward to doing it again.
Well, on some upcoming podcast, I want to get into the weeds a little bit more with 3D printing with you, because I've been following your exploits on Facebook, and I can see where you are multiple generations into this now, and orders of magnitude of knowledge. So it's probably the appropriate time to really start pumping you for information, I think.
Oh, without a doubt. And I think you probably heard that I bought myself an SLA printer, right?
I did.
Yeah. So, and that's, oh boy, let me tell you, we'll talk about it the next time.
Yeah, but, exactly.
There's a lot to talk about.
The whole topic in and of itself. So, for me, just from attending things standpoint, the next thing I'm actually planning to go to isn't for a while. It would be the Valley Forge meet, which is usually around the middle or end of March, right?
That sounds about right. Yep.
Yeah. And, I always enjoy going to that meet. It's a great bunch of people, and it's right in the, you know, it's a bunch of compatible modelers in terms of the area that I'm modeling and all that. Mm-hmm, so it's sure. Like, it's not to be missed.
Yeah.
And of course I will always be at New England RPM.
Of course. Yeah, I felt terrible I couldn't go this year, but again, work got in the way. So.
Anything happening in, you know, the September, October timeframe, I'm sort of on hold, on call with grandson number two. So, you know, made me not able to plan anything, concert wise or event wise or, trip wise. Although I think I am planning on going to the annual slideshow at the DuPont Hose Company.
Oh, that sounds pretty neat.
Which, it's actually a great event. They always have, excellent presentations. It's attended by a lot of former railroaders, and if you can make friends with the right people, let's put it this way. I was talking to a fellow who worked for the D&H, and I was just introduced to him by a mutual friend down there, and I said, hold on a sec, and I went and got my legal pad, and I took notes during the conversation, because everything this guy was telling me was of interest, and I didn't want to lose anything.
Right. And, oh, that's a great opportunity. Yeah.
I no longer have the short-term memory to suck all of that in whole. You know what I mean?
It's just totally understand that.
Just doesn't happen anymore. You know. So, believe it or not, and I did that when I was in having a couple of phone conversations with Mike Bednar. You know, I mean, just everything he's saying is important. And
okay,
important. Well, I mean, to me, because it's just gold, you know, this information.
And oh yeah, you're never going to find that anywhere else.
No, and I it's first person accounting, right? So I can't tell you how many times I've gone back to the legal pad from those phone calls and flipped the pages and said to my buddy Dave, no, here's what he said, you know. So that's very, 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 very useful info. And I guess question number two I had for you is, what is the next project that you want to either start or finish?
That's an excellent question, and something I've actually been thinking about quite a bit lately. And I think what it's going to be is I want to get a serious push on getting a lot more scenery done, which for me has always been the hardest thing to do, partly because I'm colorblind, and that makes it difficult.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, I actually don't do too badly. I usually have somebody around to, you know, make sure I'm not doing something really stupid. And, you know, like you can't put purple in the water, you know, okay, you know, I get it. But
if you worked for the railroad, you would prefer position light signals, obviously.
Well, absolutely, yeah. In fact, that was the, I mean, if I had ever really considered working for the railroad, that would have killed it right there.
Yep.
Because you can't be colorblind and work on the railroad. It just but so scenery is going to be the big thing, I think. I really want to, part of that is because I've been working on for about the last 2 years my Master Model Railroad certification. Mm-hmm. And I've got three of them down already. In fact, I have four. Might have four, I'm not sure. One of the ones that I really want to go for is the scenery one. And I really want to push to get that done. So I'm going to be doing a couple of scenes in the lower part of the railroad, probably around Winnipeg and Wilton, which are on the lower level on the backside of the peninsula. And I'm hoping it's going to have a couple of mills. It's got a waterfall. It's got a chase for a canal.
Which What's is, there now? Just benchwork?
Mostly it's benchwork. There's a little bit of, what do you call it? Plaster, you know, with a little bit of paint on it. That's all going to get probably torn out and redone.
Yep.
And then I got the backdrop painting and so like that. But I'm hoping that this winter, you know, because it's a good time to do this kind of thing. That's what I'm hoping to really spend a lot of time doing.
Do you think you'll still have the same work travel schedule in the winter that you did this summer?
Well, actually, the summertime is usually our busiest period. Mm-hmm. So it's usually in the summers when I'm away the most. And usually from about October to January, February, I'm usually pretty much home.
So it's a great time to circle the wagons.
It really is. And I'm really looking forward to trying to make sure that I get that done.
And I always look at fall as my painting tree armatures time, because you can take the whole winter and make as many trees as you want, but
it
is miserable to be outside spray painting in December, and I have done that.
Mm-hmm.
Cannot recommend it.
Oh, so
I'm going to try to, I get an early start this year, and of course I don't have the gigantic hillsides to do to this new section that I did, but it's just incredible how little area lots of trees fill. You know what I mean? You always
it just soaks them up. It's like yards just soak up, you know, freight cars, and it's like, well, I put 100 freight cars on, where'd they go? Well, you know.
So my goal for this fall, I think, is going to be to, you know, I just ordered two more cases of super trees, God help me, and I'm gonna gonna try to pick and paint those before the weather turns too cold.
That's good.
And when I have my op session, and then just this winter, really kind of try to diversify and be something more than just a layout builder. I want to build some more structures, and I want to get back to doing some weathering projects that have been long ignored.
Well,
and speaking of long ignored,
weathering guy, so yeah, go ahead.
That's really how I started writing articles, right?
Yeah.
I want to give a shout out to the Dartmouth Locomotive Works clients who have been patiently waiting for me to get myself back in action here. They're all really nice people and very patient, and I have exceeded all of the estimates of time that I thought I would get to their projects on. And one of my buddies came over the other day, he said, "What are all these boxes?" I said, "I know, I got to open these boxes."
Oh yeah.
I know I have double digits worth of locomotive installs to do. Some of which I've started. If it's something that has extensive milling, to me that's almost like a separate thing from doing the actual install. So if I'm in a milling mode, I tend to mill a bunch of things that need milling and then have them set up to then from that point on be sort of a normal install, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense, yeah.
So as part of achieving better balance, I think I should be able to get on these installs and knock them off and get them out the door. I'm going to say before the next show. How's that for an optimist?
You're very optimistic. But
going out on a limb here.
But I believe you can do it.
Well, it's like challenging you to make a tree and show us what it looks like. You know what I mean?
I can certainly do that.
If you don't set a goal, you're not going to achieve it.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right about that.
As long as
we're talking about, just real quick, as long as we're talking about things to plug, one of the reasons why I've been starting to get back to work on the railroad and looking forward to getting op sessions going again is that I just recently committed to being part of a group that's going to be doing a series of operating weekend here out in the Northeast called Island Ops. It's mostly centered around the Long Island area of New York.
Okay.
There's a bunch of railroads out there. It's going to be in, I think it's like 6 years in now. This will be the seventh year, I think. It's in April. It'll be April 2020. And you can check it out. There's some information up, but there will be more information soon at islandops.org.
Ooh, that sounds interesting.
Yeah, you should probably come down for it. And one of the things, so I've committed, it's about 6 months out, and I've committed to being, having the railroad up and ready in, you know, for that. So that's, like you were saying before, having a a commitment really goes a long way towards getting things done.
So is that island singular or islands with an S?
Island singular.
And then island, ops with an S?
Island ops with an S, yes. Okay. Dot org.
Got
so,
it.
So yeah, and so one of the reasons why I wanted to mention it is that the guy who's running it, Jim Schweitzer, who I don't know if you know Jim.
That name sounds awfully familiar.
Yeah, he's probably one of the better dispatchers here in the Northeast for model railroading.
Okay.
But Jim is the guy that runs the whole thing,
okay.
Coordinates it and all like that. And he asked me if I could let people know about it because they would be very interested in getting more people to come and sign up.
Feel free to post info on the podcast group as well.
Oh, I absolutely will. So, but it's usually a great time. There's a lot of really good railroads out there. It's all operations, you know, and it's like Friday, Saturday, Sunday. A bunch of stuff going on. So it's definitely something to come down for, sign up. It's very, if you're a newbie or a boomer, you know, it's a good place to start. There's a lot of railroads that'll take you and teach you the ropes. So if it's something you're interested in learning.
There's very stuff, much op to you drop.
It very much is. And there's all kinds of railroads in all different scales. They have some G scale ones.
Wow.
There's some N scale is obviously HO. You've got narrow gauge. You've got big time Western railroading. You name it. There's all different kinds. And you can see a lot of the railroads that were in the schedule last year.
So you get exposed to all kinds of things.
You really do. And it's a lot of great people. We highly recommend it. And the chances are that I'm going to be having an op session for that as well.
Well, it's worth attending just for that reason.
I should think so. So I can use a lot of people. So, you know, my railroad takes 16 to 18 people to run it. So by all means, sign up.
Serious? Come on out.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, that's a subject for a show right there.
Okay. We can definitely talk about that next time.
Good. I'm glad we haven't run out of things to talk about.
Oh, come on. We never run out of things to talk about.
Craig, I want to thank you again for co-hosting my inaugural show here.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
We will look forward to the next one.
Absolutely. Trees. Got to remember trees.
Trees. Absolutely.
All righty, sir.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.